Hey everyone, Chris Wan here. This is Accent Out Loud, a podcast about one person's take on English language learning, accent modification, and communication. Today, I think it's going to be episode 14, but what I wanted to talk to you guys about was this post or this comment that I wrote down. And I wrote it down in my newsletter, my weekly newsletter. You can get access to that, sign up if you're interested, on my website, lucidaccent.com. But I wrote the idea that podcasts can be used as technology that is actually facilitating accent modification or accent learning. If anyone, by the way, if anyone notices the audio sounds weird or anything like that, I'm doing this as I drive home from work. So we're gonna be doing an on-the-go podcast episode today. But like I said before, the idea is I wanted to talk about podcasts and why I think they're helpful. So podcasts are helpful because you get to pick a specific piece of content or a specific interest that you have and try to learn from it, right? I think at this point in time, with podcasts being so popular, there's a huge variety of them out there, and it's really actually helpful to find something that you're interested in, find something that you really are thinking about, and that's one way that you can actually target language learning because you actually have an interest in the content. And the idea behind that is that you pick the accent that you want. Usually you can find a general American accent, you can find a British accent, you can find an Australian accent. And the idea is, as it is going, as it is playing, you try to mimic and imitate what you're hearing. Practice the intonation. Practice the delivery. Why did they pause at this part? Why did they pause at that part? Why did they talk so fast at this part? Why did they say a certain sound this way or that way? And the idea is you're honing and immediately afterwards mimicking what you're hearing. And I think, especially for me right now, it's a sort of unique or opportune time to do it in the car because you're by yourself. You have, I don't know, 20, 30 minutes drive, depending on where you work and your home is. But the idea is you have a safe space if you feel uncomfortable to really try saying out loud the sounds that you want to be making, right? So this is actually going to be a podcast listening / practicing episode where I'll pause and play as I see fit and as I hear an accent for 20 minutes or so, see how that actually goes and sort of give you an insider view as to how I hear accents, what I'm noticing, and sort of playing along with the accent. The way that I do it is I feel like it's a fairly low stress situation. I'm by myself. It doesn't really matter how I sound, even if I make a mistake, even if I butcher the accent. So I've actually chosen an Australian English accent. I suck at accents. This is a quick disclaimer. I am not a very center of attention kind of guy. I don't like drama, like acting drama, like acting, performing. That's not my thing. So this is really something I never was comfortable with. So I was never the kid who like was amazing at accents or anything like that. And this is more so from the point of a speech language pathologist who is doing this, what I hear. And maybe if you see me struggle along with the accent, because I know the theory behind sound placement, but actually walking the walk is a different thing, then maybe you'll be inspired to practice it a little bit more. So that's sort of the intention of why I think that this is might be good content or good information for you guys out there who are listening. Thank you very much for listening, but to see me struggle, to see me have a really shitty Australian accent. And the goal would be if I continue to do this intermittently, consistently, maybe you'll notice my accent or my ability to have an Australian English accent might get better over time. So I'll play it now. It's Science Versus, a Gimlet Media podcast by Wendy Zuckerman. I think I said that right. And she's an Australian English speaker. I think she has a general Australian English accent. I briefly looked it up beforehand. She was born in the US, raised in Australia, Melbourne to be exact. So I think she doesn't have a broad Australian accent, but don't quote me on that in case, I don't know, I might upset the Australian English speakers out there if they ever do listen to this episode. But yeah, we'll go through it, we'll listen to it, I'll pause and play, and I won't pause all the time, but I'll sort of raise certain things that I do notice about the way I say words and the way she says words.
This episode of Science Versus is brought to you by Dress Codes, a new podcast from Gimlet Creative and New Balance. Host Emily Spivak speaks with artists, designers, athletes, and performers, asking how what they wore defined...
What they wore? Like, I feel like there's a lot more exaggeration in some of those sounds than I personally would typically utter. When she's saying a lot of these sounds, it's mainly the vowels that are going to be different. The actual consonants themselves, especially because it's English still, those ones are going to be fairly consistent. Like, you're not going to have another sound for P or TH or S, but it's going to be those subtle differences in vowel placement or vowel production that are going to be the definitive factor between in, I don't know, general American Canadian English speaker versus a Australian English speaker.
Asking how what they wore defined pivotal moments in their lives. You can listen.
She really extends that vowel in lives. It's a sound that changes over time. What in the, I guess in the field we'll call diphthong. It's not the consistent sound, a vowel sound the entire time. This vowel sort of blends or bleeds from one shape to another shape before it finishes. So it lives. It's I. It starts off as I, and then it starts to shape into a different sound over time. And she really does drag that sound out for quite a while, whereas I might typically say lives. But it's more lives. Like, it's a longer vowel sound duration.
And pivotal moments in their lives. You can listen to Dress Codes on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Hi, I'm Wendy Zuckerman, and you're listening to Science Versus from Gimlet. This is the show.
Even something like versus, it's more it's not as closed mouth a position. She sort of exaggerates, and it's almost like she's not chewing her words or chewing her sounds, but it's almost a little bit more exaggerated mouth movements when she's speaking. Whereas I feel like, at least for my accent, born and raised in Toronto, Ontario, moved to Vancouver, my vowels aren't as exaggerated, or I don't feel like I'm moving my mouth as much as maybe she might when she's articulating. She has a very good public speaking voice. She's quite clear with her words, and she really does enunciate well. So there's no sort of challenge understanding her sounds.
Show that pits facts against fins. On today's episode, sharks.
Sharks. So there's a little bit less, oh, there's an ambulance in the background. There's a little bit less of a obvious or hard R in that sound, in that word. Sharks instead of sharks. There's less hard R. It almost sounds like she doesn't have an R. Sharks. Sharks.
Sharks.
It's quite the long intro.
And of course, since we're talking about sharks, we have to...
Talking about sharks. It's such a more open mouth posture. Talking versus talking. I'm definitely not widening my mouth or opening my mouth as wide. I can imagine her jaw really opens quite a lot larger for that sound than typically a native or North American English speaker would do.
Sharks. we have to start with an Australian surfer.
Start. Again, no hard R. It's more start instead of start. You don't really hear that R, that hard R sound. So from her accent, I'm starting to hear that maybe those R sounds are not happening as obviously as a North American accent. So that's something to note. So something that I might then consider is for words like barn, it might be more of a barn, barn. Fern might be more of a fern, fern. It's not that hard R sound anymore. So that's something I'll sort of put in my database. If I was to do her Australian accent, then maybe I'd start dropping that R sound when I'm trying to put on this accent.
We have to start with an Australian surfer.
Okay, so my name is Mike Wells. I'm from the central coast of New South Wales in Australia.
I'm not going to talk so much about his accent. I mean, for the most part, I would think it's pretty consistent with hers, but I don't know who this guy is, so I'm just gonna let it play out. And again, I'll raise attention to things that I notice further, but you get the point.
Wales in Australia? Yeah, I guess what else would you like to know?
Mike is a super chill guy. He's been sent.
I feel like intonation-wise, it's quite up and down. Mike is a super chill guy. It's like up and down and up and down. So there's really a lot of playfulness in her intonation. We're really getting a little bit more, not exaggerated, but I think that sing-songiness to it is definitely more obvious than maybe my own accent.
Super chill guy. He's been surfing since he was 3 years old and has had some amazing experiences on the water.
Water. So again, you're not really hearing that R sound, water. And even with the T sound, similar to Canadian English, it's more of a flap rather than a fully enunciated T. So it's not water, water, it's water, water. So you're not getting the R, you're not getting the T.
This is on the water.
I've shared waves with dolphins at my local beaches where they just stayed with us and caught waves for 30 minutes. Surfed with turtles. I've had whales breach within 20 meters of me.
Oh my gosh.
So we've always shared the ocean.
But Mike has also shared the ocean with a scarier animal. So
there's a bit of a twang to her sound. Scary animal. Like it's a bit more twangy, which is another term that I don't use that term as much as a speech language pathologist, but I do know that vocal coaches, singing coaches, and I think like singer type voice coaches, we'll talk about a bit more, and it's actually the quality of your sound. I don't have a great definition of twang, what twang is, but it's something that I can take a look into more. I don't know how to, I can't put it into words how I hear it, but there is a quality or characteristic to her sound that does resonate, at least for me, with that term twang.
Let's go back to 2012. It's the middle of summer and Mike had this crappy day at work.
Summer, work, not summer. You're not really fully enunciating that R in more final positions. And you almost have this, not gravelly, but it's almost like a throaty sound quality to her speech. What I also notice is there's a lot of question, intonation, Mike. There's a lot of up talk or finishing a word in a rising intonation, a rising pitch. So it starts to sound more like questions as we talk. So again, really exaggerating or more frequent intonational pitch changes.
Middle of summer and Mike had this crappy day at work and really wanted to surf. His girlfriend, who's now his wife, came to the beach with him.
Wife, 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 wife. I think the vowel sound, she definitely elongates them a lot longer than maybe what I'm used to. Wife, it's that I, it's such a long sound in comparison to when I think of, if I say the word wife, it's that much more time, like there's so much more time spent on that sound.
Now his wife came to the beach with him, and at first everything was fine. He got in the water and it felt so good.
Completely calm, stress-free, not a thought in my head aside from, you know, it felt really good to be in the ocean.
Mike was doing what he always did, lying on his stomach on the surfboard, paddling past the break. And that's when it came out of nowhere.
Then coming out of the water with its mouth completely open was a shark. And so then it clamped down onto my arm and its bottom jaw grabbed the board. So it had the board and my arm in the same mouthful. It was a great white.
Whoa. What were you thinking at that moment?
A complete shock. Wasn't thinking anything at all. It happened so fast. I was kind of almost face to face with it. I threw a punch with my left arm and bopped it on the nose.
You punched the shark?
Yep, I hit the shark in the nose. It was a tough thing to punch as well. I'm not a fighter. It's probably the third punch I've ever thrown in my life.
It's more starting with an open vowel sound, versus if. I think the diphthong, so the change in one vowel shape to another shape, is a much more extreme change in the mouth shape than in North American Canadian English, general Canadian English, my English. And as a result, this interpretation of everything's more exaggerated and whatnot really does stand on two legs for me. It really does have evidence based, or at least for me, what I'm picking up is there's a lot more exaggerated transitions of movements in vowels. So that's particularly heightened in my reading or my pickup of it.
Third punch I've ever thrown in my life. Luckily, it shocked the shark. It let go, went under the water, and then it came back up and it was like a submarine surfacing. And then came at me again. And so the shark rammed the board and hit me. And I spun around almost 180 degrees to be facing almost the complete opposite direction. So I really came back with a bit of force. And I started thrashing, you know, thinking, okay, kick, do anything you can. I looked to the shore and my wife was looking at me. And she tilted her head to the side. And that's when I realized she hasn't seen anything. And that terrified me more because I thought, it's going to come back. You know? And she's now going to watch the entire thing.
Then Mike realizes that he can't see the shark anymore. But he does see a wave that could help him. And Mike thinks he has to get to it and catch that wave to shore. But he's nervous about sticking his bloody arm in the water with the shark still out there.
What I've heard, they can sense a drop of blood in the amount of water that's in an Olympic swimming pool. But I couldn't paddle hard enough one-handed, so I was just watching my blood spread in the water as I was paddling as hard as I could to get this wave.
Mike finally gets to shore and his arm is spurting blood. His wife runs up to him and asks, happened.
And I removed the expletives. But I said, I believe it was a shark.
That's how you said it, didn't you?
It's that calm as well.
We seem to have run into a spot of trouble.
We're in a pickle here and trouble is brewing.
So just to translate.
It was a shark. Run and call the ambulance.
Mike was taken to hospital and went straight into surgery.
I ended up counting 17 puncture wounds in my arm in my forearm.
That's a tooth every time there's so 17.
17. Tane. It's a bit more of a backed sound versus in. Tane. Like, I think it almost sounds more backed the sound, really with any sort of sound, there is a focal point where the sound really resonates or where really can be identified as coming from. Right? Where is this vowel production really focused on? Sometimes you can describe it as front of the mouth, back of the mouth. Is your jaw pretty tightly closed or is it pretty relaxed and open? Really, when you go like E, ah, you're really changing the shape of the mouth, and that, I mean, that's the reason why the vowel sound changes. That's really why the sound changes. So similarly, you can sort of think of when I'm saying these sounds, what I'm listening for or what I'm feeling for exactly is whether or not that I notice a particular change in how the mouth shape is and where I personally feel that shape deriving from. You can tell some people have more of a throaty voice or some people have more of a nasally voice. You can hear it, and really you can trust that instinct. You can trust that instinct. I mean, definitely with experience it comes better, but you can trust that instinct that like, oh, that person has a nasally voice, and that's because air is resonating in their nose a little bit more, and that causes more of a nasal sound. Or really some people have a throaty voice, and that might be more, something's happening more in their throat. It might be there's more constriction in the throat, or there's maybe more constriction reducing or sort of keeping airflow from fully resonating in the mouth. Maybe the mouth is kept a little bit smaller, so the throat is the one that's really resonating or having that resonance involved a little bit more.
In the front.
That's a tooth every time. There's so 17, like, teeth.
17 teeth, yeah.
Oh my god.
Each tooth was up to an inch deep.
After a night in the hospital, surgery, and a ton of rehab, pretty remarkably, Mike's arm is now okay. Basically, all he's got to show for it is some pretty small scars, and of course, this story.
Yeah, I got out 10 out of 10. Luckiest bloke alive.
And stories like Mike's are often what we think of when it comes to sharks. You know, they're not just predators, but almost super predators. And if we happen to cross paths with one...
Paths with one. That sounds like a very much more backed sound. Path with path. Ath. Off. Path with one. So that A sound in this specific context, ath, is now changing more to an off sound.
To cross paths with one, there's no hope for us. Getting away would mean we're the luckiest bloke alive. In fact, this message is all over the place. It's what we hear each year on Shark Week, but of course, it usually comes with sinister music and an intense voiceover.
News of the man-eating great white shakes nerves across Australia.
A shark is a precision instrument of killing.
And look, we love these stories. They're exciting and terrifying, and we eat them up. But today, we're going to go beyond the scary stories, diving a little deeper. See?
Diving a little deeper. Deeper. Instead of deeper, it's deeper. Again, another a more backed sound. I think in Canadian, general American English, a lot of the focal point of our sound production is much more oral, in that it's the resonance is primarily middle of the mouth, front of the mouth, whereas Australian English, at least these sounds that I'm picking up, seem to be a lot more backed, deeper versus deeper.
Yes, diving a little deeper to see what the latest science can tell us about sharks and why they sometimes bite people. And we're gonna find out, are sharks as terrifying as we've been led to believe? When it comes to sharks, there's a lot of...
It was a f***ing shark.
But then, there's science. Science vs. Sharks is coming up just after we paddle past the break.
So, on my car dashboard, it says We've only gotten 6 minutes and 45 seconds into the podcast, and I've already talked for quite a bit of time. I'm almost at my destination, and we're really honing specific words, which we're really discussing specific things and noticing these patterns in 6 minutes worth of a speech sample. And I think that's important to know, because maybe when you're doing this, pick maybe a podcast that you have already heard once, that maybe the content isn't as important for you to pay attention to, so that you can double down on listening to why or how the sounds are different versus thinking about what exactly is she saying anymore. And really, you can hear sort of how and what I'm paying attention to. Why do I say it the way, or why am I noticing?
Welcome back. Today's show is all about sharks and whether you should be scared to go in the water. So far, we've had our scary shark story and we've been a bit creeped out by Shark Week. Now, let's dive into the science. First up, we wanted to speak to a scientist who gets up close and personal with sharks. Stanford recently...
Even that word personal, it's per. So even that vowel change, the E in personal, that first E, it's more of a back sound. Personal. It really, that the origin of that sound is definitely a lot more back in the mouth, or back almost in the throat, it feels like personal. And she's also not really enunciating that R. Once again, another theme that we're picking up. Personal. It's not personal. You're not really hearing that R again.
Personal with sharks. Stanford researcher Taylor Chappell, who studies great whites, and he says seeing them in the wild is exactly as cool as it sounds.
Yeah, it's almost one of those things you can't explain. This, you see it on TV and you're like, yeah, that's a big animal, but to be there in the water with
that, and again, I'm not gonna talk about this part because there's no point.
It really is something special.
And even though there are hundreds of different species of shark,
it's a much more open sound than R. Like with the R, if I were to say there are, immediately my mouth starts to shape into more of a concave. It's closing up with the R sound, R, versus with hers, you have a much more open mouth shape because you're not producing that R sound, the ah, and it's a backed sound. So then you get this improved open projecting sound versus R.
Oh, there are hundreds of different species of sharks.
She really emphasizes that sharks quite obviously, and the pacing is quite good in terms of it being slow. She stresses specific words. These are not something specific to Australian English accent, but I'm just thinking about for somebody learning rhythms in English, that would be something that they need to take note of, right? When a native English speaker, regardless of if it's Australian or Canadian or American, is already fairly in tune with intonational changes, durations of sounds, pitch changes, but maybe somebody who isn't as proficient in English, or maybe their primary language doesn't necessarily change the pitch as often, then it's something to pay attention to. So I know I'm going down another tangent, but for example, in tonal languages, pitch changing up, pitch changing down, that actually changes the word. So it's almost like if you were to imagine if I said word versus word, that would change what the meaning of it is. Let me just say that one more time. In tonal languages, the concept is that if I said word and word, or even word If I said it those three ways, that changes the actual meaning. So obviously, when they are coming to a new country, they're learning English, and they now have to pick up English, they might not realize that they are so rigid in their tonal pronunciation because they are trained to think that changing the tone is actually a different word, then they might not have that up and down sing-songy intonation or use it as freely as a native English speaker, because it literally will change the meaning. That's the breakthrough thing that you need to think about. So sometimes languages non-native English speakers, the criticism or the difficulty is that their words or their speech might sound very monotone. And if it's monotone, then it might be boring sounding to a native English speaker. It might not be interpreted properly when you're adding in emotion. And maybe they don't pick up on the subtleties that a native English speaker might talk about. If I said, I'm fine, those have meaningful differences in English. The words themselves, the content themselves, still means the same thing, but the actual emotional backing to those different ways of saying it really changes. And these are all things that are not taught specifically when you are learning English as a second language. Nobody tells you these things or trains you to really grasp that concept, that difference in meaning. So I'm at my destination now. That was just a very quick, 8-minute analysis of a podcast episode, but it really does force me to talk about a bunch of different things that I think are helpful for language learners, accent learners. So maybe I'll do some more of this if you guys are interested or if it's helpful. Hope y'all are having a good day. See you next time.
If you like what you're hearing, or even if you aren't, let me know. I know this podcast can be something great and educational for a lot of people. I'm here to listen, so give me your take, your likes, your dislikes, and maybe we can make this into something that'll help a lot of people. Leave a rating on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. Once I figure out how to read the reviews, I'm sure it'll help.